Hello, Bedford. This is Business IQ Radio coming to you on 105.1 WBNH, Bedford Community Radio. I'm Don Byrne, and I'm here with my co-host, as usual, Andrea O'Brien of the Small Business Development Center. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, Don.
And we have a very interesting guest. Once again, one of the terrific advantages of working with Andrea, who is with the Small Business Development Center in the state, is that she has an amazing Rolodex. And I think you knocked it out of the park again today, Andrea. I understand that our guest, Craig Casarino, is a really very interesting person with a lot of diverse backgrounds. I think a lot of interesting lessons we can all learn and hear about business.
He's a real self-made man, and he's had a very interesting past. He is actually the commercial consul to Brazil for the state of New Hampshire.
Right, and I think you told me that. So I will tell you that in the very best spirit of doing show prep, I actually went and did a little research on Brazil. And so let me awe you with my facts here. According to a study done in 2013, a census, it's about 200 million people in Brazil. It's the largest country in South America, fifth largest in the world by landmass. Its name Brazil comes from the Brazilwood tree. It was claimed by Portugal in 1500 and declared independence in 1822. The capital, Brasilia, which I've been to, is in the middle of the Amazon forest.
Wow.
It's very interesting.
What were you doing there?
I was doing business with the Brazilian government. And it's about a three-hour flight of São Paulo, which is the largest of the cities. Like the United States, it covers three different time zones. It was one of the founding members of the United Nations. It has the second longest river in the world, the longest being the Nile. And so I've stepped into both the largest and second longest rivers in the world, 2,500 airports. And of course, when people think of Brazil, what do they think about? They think about their amazing soccer team.
Well, today, I think when people think about Brazil, they might think about Zika, which is where it came, seems to have broken onto the airwaves, and the upcoming Olympics.
Exactly. So I'm hoping we'll get an opportunity to talk to Craig about that. So those are my fun facts about Brazil.
So I'll say that if you're a New Hampshire business and you've thought about doing business in Brazil, Craig Casarino is someone who you could use as a resource. He knows the country well and the customs and how to navigate down in Brazil. So
terrific. Let's do our quick little roundtable going around the state for interesting bits of news. I have a couple of things I'd like to mention here. One is from the standpoint of tax law, something always on the forefront of people's minds here in the state. I know that the governor, Governor Hassan, recently signed into law a new initiative that allows us to quadruple, go from $25,000 to $100,000, the deduction that can be taken for capital expenses. It's still a bit shy of the federal guidelines, and I know people are agitating for it, but seems to be a good step forward in that area, and it'll be effective in 2017. And that the ride-sharing service, Uber and Lyft, are now going to be a little bit more tightly regulated, and this has been supported by both of these organizations. And it just comes to my mind that we might want to think about doing some kind of a quarterly legislative update, because laws and rules and regulations do, in fact, have an impact on business.
Well, you know, who would be a great guest for the show would be someone from the BIA. That is their bread and butter.
Well, interesting you say that, because I do know that the BIA is actually running a series of roundtables around the state, hosted by different chambers of commerce, looking for input so they can go up and help set the agenda for the 2017-2018 legislative initiative.
Yes, I attended yesterday's roundtable at the Manchester Chamber, and Jim Roach did a great job in running the meeting, and he really wants to hear, they would like to hear from businesses about what's important to them and bring that agenda forward. And so if you have a chance, listening audience, to attend one of these meetings, you should take advantage, because this is your opportunity to get your message to the legislature.
I want to give you a minute or two to also talk a little bit about the initiatives that you are following around the state. But of course, I have to sneak in something about drones. And I want to tell you that in my ongoing effort to stay up in terms of the advancement of drone technology. Once again, drones are saving people's lives and making things easier and safer. As a former New York City resident, I'm quite familiar with the fact that there are many steam boilers that run under the streets of Manhattan, and they help keep people warm. They provide heat to many of the residents. And so they are now using, Consolidated Edison is using drones to conduct inspection of these steam boilers, which are in very tight environments and dangerous environments. And when they were sending people in to do the inspections, they had to equip them with all kinds of hazmat and protective gear. Con Edison, according to Wired magazine, estimates that they'll save about $100,000 per inspection. And they're expanding the use of drones to also check things like down power lines, damaged buildings. Even there's been a proposal to use drones to inspect planes that are in the air that have been reported to have been hit by lightning. And to jump to the other side of the world, Japan is experimenting with using drones to pinpoint the use of pesticides to help control insects. So drones are everywhere. And in deference to your attitude towards drones, I will also mention that I do know that Lockheed Martin is developing a laser weapon that is prepared to knock out hordes of weaponized drones if they're used in the battlefield. So we give you both sides of it, the positive. So I don't know if there's anything you'd like to add to that.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to appeal to our listening audience and say, please, please email Don and tell him you've had enough of drones. We are going to feature another topic eventually once he's exhausted his fascination with drones. So we would love to hear from the listening audience about other topics that they would like to hear about.
Well, we always want to hear from the audience, but let's move around the state here and don't be knocking my drones out of the air.
Okay. All right. Well, there are a couple things I want to mention. Some gatherings happening around the state on July 14th at the Center for Women and Enterprise. That's 30 Temple Street. You can take in a crowdfunding alternative and financing your business workshop. It's $20. And so you can, if you have any interest in that, you can contact the Center for Women and Enterprise. Also on July 14th, at the Secretary of State's office in Concord, there's a session sponsored by the SBA entitled We Mean Business, Assistance for New and Existing Businesses. And on July 18th, the Veteran Business Owners Association is hosting a business gym at the Manchester VA. So if you have any interest in any of those, make sure you get them on your calendar. The other thing I wanted to just highlight is that the Bedford Village Inn, which is one of my favorite locations in Bedford, has opened their the Grand.
Right, the new hotel.
So those are, and so we encourage everybody to stop by and check that out.
Right. Support our local businesses here in Bedford. With that, why don't we move to our guest, and I'm going to ask you to set it up and welcome our guest onto WBNH 105.1 Business IQ Radio.
So our guest today is Craig Casarino of Leonardo Technologies, and he's really a very interesting guy, wouldn't you say, Don?
Absolutely, and it's great to see somebody who has an office right here in Bedford. You're over not far from where all of these new stores are opening up, all these food stores are opening up near us, right?
Right, yeah, right across the street from the new Whole Foods. It's the Norwood Group has a big yellow colonial there, and we're located in that office. I've known Carl. We grew up together. So,
Well, we're going to have you give your address and all the contact later, but why don't you do it right now in case people once they, we've given you, in our introduction, we've said some of the exciting things about what you're doing. So what's the best way to reach you? You have a website. How should people, if they want to reach out to you, what's the best way to?
I think the best thing would be to get in touch through telephone or email, and we can give you all that information as we move forward later today.
Great. So, yes, Andrew, I think I would agree with you.
He's interesting. And he has many, many jobs. And so we'd like to start by asking Craig to talk a little bit about himself and his story. He's a self-made guy. He's an experienced entrepreneur. He's actually the consul to Brazil, the commercial consul to Brazil. That is a, you know, we'd like to hear more about that and your stories in Brazil.
Yeah, who would have thought that the way to for people in New Hampshire to get to Brazil was through here, through Bedford. Yeah, right. Very interesting.
He's a lifelong learner, and he's taken classes at Antioch and is actually engaged in a new program at Antioch, which he'll talk about, the Nature-Based Leadership Initiative. And his most recent achievement is that he started a nonprofit, Aliança da Terra, which is dedicated to helping Brazilian producers do better and be more sustainable.
I'll just interject. I didn't start Aliança. It had been around for since 2004. It was started by a guy by the name of John Carter and his wife, and I'll expound on that a little.
Good, and you have to translate the name for us. Yes. I think I know part of what it means, but
it means Earth Alliance.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, once again, welcome. And as Andrea said, can you tell us how'd you get started, and what path led you to all these very interesting businesses?
Well, it was funny. I was talking with Steve Jones at Antioch. He's the new president of Antioch University, and we were talking about coincidence. And realized that there's no such thing as coincidence. And so my pathway it's a journey, I guess. That's probably the best way of saying it. So maybe a little history. I grew up in Milford, graduated from Milford High in 1962.
Remember what the song of the year was in 1962?
I don't remember the song of the year, but, you know.
There's a shot that it was a Beatles song, but it might be too early for the Beatles.
It was actually too early for the Beatles. So in 62, graduated, the only boy in a family, a divorced mom, who was just wonderful, and the dad was wonderful, and we set part of that journey. And no experience. The only jobs were available were, you know, working at OK Tool or Hitchner's, the factories. And education was not part of our forte in our family at that particular time. So I wandered and decided to join the military, join the Air National Guard at Pease Air Force Base. It was selective service at that time. And did that and got out of that. I opened a coffee house in Manchester in 1964. That was the height of, you know, Dylan Baez, all of that.
Colombian or Brazilian coffee.
Right.
I just have to ask you, yes. Did you have long hair?
I had, yeah, the shoulder. I was, you know, not really a hippie, but a flower child. And and the coffee house was just a great place to meet a lot of local artists and other folks, musicians. And it was just a wonderful experience. It lasted about 4 years. And then I decided after getting out of the service to go to horseshoeing school because I thought I wanted to become a veterinarian. And not having the resources I thought I'd put myself through with large animals. So I went to horseshoeing school out in Colorado, came back, and that was the height of the 60s. So at that particular time, it was pretty wild. And so as a blacksmith shoeing horses with long hair, I decided to change my name to Joe Sunshine and shot a lot of horses around the area and ended up at a racetrack in Hinsdale, New Hampshire. That's sort of where my career ended in horseshoeing because my back went out. Then I decided to try another adventure, which was recycling. So I bought an old dump truck. Kitchener's gave me some money. There was another group Hancock, New Hampshire. They lent me some money. So we started recycling in Milford and Amherst and Wilton and putting barrels at dumps. These were open burning dumps. And I bought a tractor and started recycling, and it grew to an area that allowed me to get into consulting with communities, and eventually ended up opening an operating recycling center in Milford, helped build the Wilton Recycling. So it was a career change for me. And that's when I basically figured out the word ecology, what that meant, by a group of people living in one of the quarries in Milford, New Hampshire. They had bought a quarry. Two doctors from one from Harvard, one from MIT, just changed my life. They were my mentors, and it started my journey down to sustainability and ecology and a lot of different things.
Great.
You're listening to WBNH 105.1 Bedford Community Radio, and we're here today with Craig Casarino, a lifetime entrepreneur and not a tree hugger, but someone who cares a lot about the environment and helping.
Well, from what I've heard in the discussions we've had offline, someone who's trying to bring a balance here in terms of good business sense and the logic of sustainability and the value proposition of sustainability, which to the businesses, this is actually a sub-theme because of Andrea's experience as the sustainability person for the SBDC here in New Hampshire. We talk about this a lot, and we're big believers. Full disclosure, folks, we're big believers. We think sustainability makes sense and that it can pay for itself. So I think in that context, we're really delighted to have you here and learn some more about these interesting initiatives. You know, I do want to just touch on one other thing that we should think about for the future, Andrea. There is an interesting, you mentioned the entertainment music business in Manchester, in and around this area. It continues to be a vibrant area. I know that with many of the different restaurants and different venues up there, we're getting some really interesting education. So maybe a future show, we should look at entertainment. Entertainment is the second largest export for the United States. So it's another vibrant. Thank you for that idea, Craig.
Well, we appreciate it. My pleasure.
So can you tell us a little bit about, I'm kind of intrigued to learn a little bit more about what you're doing with Antioch. Can you tell us a little bit about that nature initiative?
Yes. So give you a little background on Antioch. So during the early 80s, I applied to Antioch. They had a program then. It's called non-NBA because I didn't have an undergraduate degree. They allowed me to enter into a program specifically with life's work. I had to put together a whole series of different programs for them, but entered into their graduate program under their non-BA program.
We should tell our listeners Antioch is out in Keene. It has a footprint across the U.S. as one of the most highly regarded graduate study institutions in the U.S., but the nearest location is Keene, if I remember correctly.
It is. They have a variety of programs there. And and this all comes back to Brazil. Antioch, I went there, met with the new president, Steve Jones. He and I connected really nicely. And I had approached him because I was, as commercial consul, I had a friend of mine in Brazil that under the auspices of their commercial consulting company, they had a nonprofit, the Institute for Biodiversity, which was doing a lot of studies for the Atlantic region from north to south, and looking at species diversity. So I approached Antioch to see if we could develop an exchange program for graduate students to go to Brazil. They hadn't had that program in place. We decided to embark on that. That was about 2.5 years ago. And what he asked me was, when did you graduate from Antioch? And I said, geez, I really didn't, because my heart was broken from a girl that ran off to California, and I stopped my graduate degree program. And he said, well, we have to do something about that. And so they put a committee together and allowed me to go back and finish my degree. And as we did, I marched in April, in June, as probably one of the oldest students there. But it was just a great experience. So when we were discussing Steve Jones had an interest in putting together this nature-based leadership institute, and asked if I would help be involved in that. And I was honored to do that, because he brought together a team, a national team, that has just been a great, great learning experience for me. And so we're actually having our first, Saturday, August 20th, of this year in Keene, and it's going to be a workshop, and it's applying nature's lessons to leadership in life. And this is really where all the guiding principles for the Institute come from, is nature.
Well, that's great. As that gets closer, please let us know, and we'll make sure that some additional announcements get out on the station here.
Great.
So, you know, we kind of leapt over your attachment to Brazil.
Right.
Which is something that I think have quite a few years in Brazil and doing business there. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So I had developed a recycling business here in the U.S. and we did, it was fun, and I thought we made some good improvements. But I could see the writing on the wall. Large companies were doing integrated waste management, so I sold my contracts out to a larger waste hauling company. And so this was in my late 40s, and I was single, no children. And
with
what do
pocket,
you do?
With a pocket full of cash.
And what do? You go to Brazil and lay on the beach and figure out where, where the next step would. And while I was there, I went to Rio because I didn't know where else to go.
I would have gone to Ipanema, which I think is
part of Rio. Rio, yeah, right. It's one of the beaches. And so I fell in love with Brazil and just stayed.
So it's just by chance.
It was just by chance.
You just wandered there.
I did. I wandered to Brazil. After I had gone to Machu Picchu, I thought, I have my spiritual experience in Machu Picchu, and I'd go to Brazil and lay on the beach and have another experience. So because Brazil's music. So, that was part of what I was looking to do. And just stayed. And Brazil was going through a difficult economic time then as it is now. And they kept telling me, Craig, the fund's in Rio, all the money's in São Paulo. And if you want to stay in Brazil, you need to go to São Paulo. So I did. And as I said earlier, that I don't think there's anything as coincidence. I met people that just, I didn't speak the language. I didn't know anybody. And but things just kept happening. And I met some wonderful people who took me in, and we started, they wanted to start recycling. So I started doing consulting with them because, again, I couldn't pronounce a Brazilian word if I had to, and we started doing that. And as that started to progress, there were a lot of trade missions coming to Brazil from the U.S. and from New Hampshire, one of them. And so being bold, I went to the embassy there, and when the commercial trade missions would come in, I would say, here I am, I'm living in São Paulo, and can I help you? So that was sort of the...
So you volunteered.
Yes, and what I did was started then to sign up clients because people wanted to be. So what I was doing was introducing American-based businesses and institutions to Brazilian companies or projects that they could then and sell technology. So I, you know, was able to make a living, not a great one, but a good, you know, enough to keep me there. And while I was there, I met a wonderful woman. And she and I decided that we probably should try to be a couple. And we did. And we started coming back. She had never been to the U.S., started coming back and forth. One of the companies that I was hosting there offered me a job to come back to the U.S. To work with them, starting their international division. I did. And so Kachita and I moved back to the U.S. I had kept my house in Lyneborough, New Hampshire, during this period that I was there, during those 5 or 6 years. And we moved back into our house. And so worked for this company. And during that period, after a while, the state of New Hampshire had a program where they were offering a woman named Dawn Wivel, who was head of the International Trade Agency over in Portsmouth, it's part of the economic development part of the state, said that they were starting a program that offered people with familiarity with countries to become commercial consuls for the state to help develop business for small companies here or large. And so she introduced me, and under Governor Lynch, we, you know, signed up to be the commercial consul.
And you're doing that still today?
I am. We just continue to have small companies that want to do business. And I think that during our offline, we were talking about the importance in doing international business. And I think one of the biggest thing that anybody can do is really have boots on the ground. You need somebody there that understands culture, understands language. And, for example, with Brazil, you know, you don't do any cold calling. You have to know somebody that knows somebody to get introduced.
Do you know those people? are you the guy? Because I work with companies that would like to export to Brazil. And if they needed that support, are you the guy they should contact?
Yes, because, you know, after, you know, now it's been 20 years of going back and forth. I have family and friends in Brazil. Kachina and I have a son, a 17-year-old now, who's obviously half Brazilian. And so we have a lot of relationships. And then as we get further into the conversation, a new organization that I'm going to be working with that actually has big foundation in Brazil.
So what kinds of businesses are finding a market in Brazil, and does it work the opposite? Are you helping Brazilian companies find market opportunities here in New England?
Well, you know, at this particular point right now, this an expression in Portuguese, muito complicado. It's very complicated because the Brazilian economy and all the political things that are going on, import taxes into Brazil are absurd. And so, you know, understanding how to walk and weave yourself through the maze is critical to do that. But, you know, technology is always something. Energy is another. Medical devices, there are lots of different opportunities. One of the things that brought me to Antioch was institutional exchange of looking now to bring Brazilian students to U.S. and to Antioch or to the University of New Hampshire. You know, so we have another program now with the University of West Virginia for veterinarian students that want to do service work. So there's a variety of opportunity.
So if I am recalling correctly, one of the headlines around Brazil a few years ago was it achieved energy independence, I think using some biofuel to augment other resource they have. Am I correct on that? And are they still in that sort of position?
You were. I mean, they do a lot of ethanol through sugar cane.
Sure, that's right.
However, most of that wealth of energy came from Petrobras. It was the state-owned oil company, which now has been tanked because of all the political corruption that from large corporations. You know, that's a whole show in itself of what happened, but it devastated the country, and it certainly is right now. Having said that, you know, where there are challenges, there's opportunities, and understanding clearly where those markets are and who the right people to do business with is really the answer, I think.
You're listening to 105.1 WBNH, the Business IQ radio show with Andrea O'Brien and Don Byrne, and our guest today, Craig Casarino. And very fascinating. So we've learned a bit about Brazil and some opportunities, and we now know the person to speak to if we have an interest in that area. But I'm sure that the lessons learned there are generic to anybody going international. As you were saying, we've had guests in here who made the point that once you put up a website today, your business is international. I think what I really appreciate about what you just said is the key to successful execution is to have a local presence, someone who understands the local rules, regulations, how to network properly, etc. So that's, I think, a lesson that transcends any particular country. That's just generally very, very true.
And there's additional support for businesses that want to export through DRED at the ITRC, the International Trade Resource Center. I know Dawn was the figurehead there for many years. She is consulting now, I believe, but they do still have a trade center, and they have lots of opportunities for businesses who are looking for technical support. Sometimes they have grant money to support a new venture abroad or establish an exporting market. And they have trade missions still, I believe.
So once again, if there's interest, I guess, Andrea, people can contact you over at your office at UNH Manchester, the Small Business Development Center, and you can connect them with Craig or his counterparts in whatever part of the world they want to go. I know the Department of Commerce does a nice job in terms of linking us up. I've used them in the past in making some international and developing some international business. So
Craig, so you're starting or you're helping establish and develop this nature-based leadership institute at Antioch. What, I guess it's dedicated to education of students in the field of environmental stewardship?
Yes, and, you know, I think all the answers that we need to know are based in nature. So what the nature-based leadership is going to is developing this these programs for certification, graduate degrees, and, you know, I think, you know, there are three guiding values, and I'll just kind of expose them. Human health and well-being are intrinsically linked to the health of the planet's living system. Direct experience in nature nourishes health, hope, creativity, and compassion. And nature-based leadership is inherently collaborative, generative. It differs significantly from current mechanistic and hierarchy leadership models in a way to restore the balance. So if you start to look at the guiding principles that are, and you can go on Antioch's website and look at all of this, and the language of nature, everybody understands abundance, community, diversity, all of these principles that are in balance in nature, economics, it's all there, and how you develop the leadership values. So if you're a large corporation, do you really have hierarchy or horizontal? You know, so there's a lot of people looking at this, and what we're looking to do at Antioch, and And again, there's just a great team that's come together, and Antioch has all those resources available to them to really just do a great job and get into the basics of leadership.
You know, I was listening to, and I wish I could remember who I was listening to, but they were talking about how to gain power, for lack of a better word. And they said that, you know, in the old days, hundreds of years ago, in the really old days.
I was wondering why you were looking at me as you were saying that.
In the really old days, power was obtained by killing your enemy. And, of course, this was centuries ago. But today they've said that to really amass, and I don't like to use the word power, but a following maybe, or it's done with collaboration and team building and the value that you bring to others. And that's the new, or that's another way, a better way to become a leader in your field. So if you want to become a leader, these are the techniques that...
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, having this discussion right now is because when I was... Ecology is a way of thinking so that you connect, always a connecting the dots. So if you think ecologically as an ecosystem, and sometimes people say, Craig, how can you do all the stuff? You're engaged in this and this. And I keep saying, well, it's always for the benefit of the whole, because for me, I cannot separate it. It's really, you know, so if I go off on a tangent sometime, you know, some people in the past will say, well, that's a little scatterbrained, right? But for me, it's just part of the process of understanding how systems work. And, you know, natural systems are so imbalanced that you need to have all of those. And that boils down to what you said from the beginning about sustainability and making money. You know, if you're not, you don't have all the legs under you. When I was in graduate school, the word eco, so economics or ecology, that root eco means to manage one's household. It's a Greek word. So if you learn how to manage our household being the earth, you can make some money. And, you know, it's simplistic. And
does economy and ecology have the same root word? Is that?
Yes, they do.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Yeah. So as we start to move in this new paradigm over the next 20 or 30 years, because that's where it's headed. You know, the demands from the millennials and everybody in the younger generation is, you know, health is important. And how that gets done. So agriculture is becoming another really big area that we're getting involved here.
You know, I don't think globalism is going away, but I think it's the focus on local and, you know, having a small ecosystem, even a small supply chain, I think is the way we're headed. The pendulum kind of has swung.
Yes, you know, and we're looking at what they call the circular economy. And that's, you know, it's a term that's been around for a while, but it's becoming far more critical now. So if you have localized food systems and energy systems are disruptive or, you know, you have all that money. For example, the University of New Hampshire, Tom Kelly, he's the director for sustainability there. They did a study with a lot of the universities here, and they came up with these kinds of statistics. There's 35 million people live in the northeast part of the U.S. It's a $28 billion market, and only 6% of the food is grown here. So they initiated, they just had a big conference in Connecticut called 50-60, the New England Food Solutions, and looking at growing or producing 50% of our products by 2060, you know, chunks at a time. And that then those monies stay here. We're doing just what you were saying. It's becoming more localized. You know, you can see it farm to table, restaurants, but it's, you know, people like to see where their food's growing and what there's, you know, where their energy's coming from, and this makes it a lot clearer.
Yeah, I'm a little bit involved in an offshoot of this, which is I'm part of a national study run by the National Institute of Standards and Technologies on community resiliency, and what you're talking about, closed systems and being able to have close at hand the resources you need, are elements that we're using as we begin to measure and come up with an index to measure the level of resiliency of different communities. And it's actually moving towards developing a national standard in this area. So it's a couple-year project that's ongoing right now, and there's probably 200 of us involved in this. It's a big, big project, so it's interesting. And interestingly enough, Mrs. O'Brien has a project going on similar to this, supported by our local power company, that at some point in time when she's in a position to talk some more about this, we can. But we're hinting out here to our audience that there's some interesting things to come in the future in terms of some surveys.
Well, I think community resiliency and, you know, is critical to our economy, especially when we see all the events happening, as, you know, in the daily events, weather events, and things that are kind of out of our control, and how we respond to that is certainly going to impact the health of our economy and, you know, everyone, our national security.
Right, and quality of life issues, quality of education. I'm sure this is all tied into some of the lessons that we can learn from these programs that you're talking about. We're beginning to move towards the end of our show here. I want to make sure you have another sort of interesting initiative. I want to make sure that we're putting some time on that. You're listening to 105.1 WBNH. This is Business IQ Radio with Don Byrne and Andrea O'Brien. I think I got it right that time, Andrea.
Yep.
Okay, very good. And our guest today, Craig Casarino. So can you tell us about this? I know you have yet another new interesting, exciting initiative, which has a sustainability link or branch connection here as well. Are you in a position to talk about this? I know it's relatively new. Don't want you to, but we like to make news here on the station. So if we can have some breaking news, you'll make Andrea and I heroes, and that's always a good thing.
So specifically, what
the new program, the new company that you're working with out of Brazil?
Yes. So one of the projects that I've been involved in, and this is sort of a framing how this came to be. So I am involved in raising grass-fed beef also. And so we've been working with a group out of Texas with a breed of cattle called Akaushi. It's a Japanese breed. It's high monounsaturated fats with grass-fed, all natural. And so we've been working with them. We brought them to Brazil. And about 6 years ago, they've crossbred this particular breed with the local cattle there, Nalori, and have had great results in performance. And so we're looking at developing a national grass-fed beef program using high-brand cattle, the Akaushi, to develop this, because the performance of these cattle is really, really important. So
I have a question. Why breeding with the cattle down in Brazil? Could they not survive on their own without?
No. They're you know, Nalori is it's if you can visualize, it's the white Brahma type with a big hump, and when you crossbreed the Akaushi with the Nalori, all the good genetics get passed by, so you're enhancing that particular quality of the product itself. So you're getting a better cattle. So, you know, I know there's a lot of people that are going, cattle in the Amazon and all this, but cattle are herd animals. And if you're looking at ecology and systems, you know, you start to look at how cattle can be done in an ecological way, carrying capacity, all the things that are necessary to develop this. So during this whole process, I met the group that is in Brazil that we introduced to the cattle people there. And they formed a company to develop this coffee, cotton, and cattle traceability. And so we started talking with them about developing this program, and they liked the concepts that I was bringing through technology and networking, and veterans. We're doing a lot of program with veterans here in the U.S. For training, and they invited me to take a leadership role in this Alianza de Tierra. And for me, the wonderful thing, and my wife and I were just talking about this the other day, is sort of culminating everything that I've ever done over the last 72 years to fruition, because now I have a platform, a wonderful group to work with, very dedicated, compassionate, morally right, and doing things not just for the resources, but saving resources.
And I think it ties back to the things you said earlier in terms of your interest and concern in animal health.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned you were thinking of becoming a veterinarian, and you worked with large animals, and, you know, your focus on sustainability and the economy and the ecology and all of these. Just, yeah, I can see how this is a nice, it's a nexus.
Well, there's a wannabe cowboy in me too, you know, that, you know, give me a horse and some riding and I'm happy. So, you know.
There are bridle paths here in Bedford, as right. You probably know, I think, and in Amherst perhaps as well. So.
You know, I just think it's so interesting that the way you've embraced entrepreneurship from a young age through now, you've just kind of made opportunities for yourself as you have gone along. You've been able to identify, because you're someone who is open and creative. And so for individuals who are listening who have had one career or another, it's important to kind of keep in mind that when opportunity knocks, you have to open the door and kind of embrace it.
You know, and I've been thinking about this, because in transitioning now from, you know, being in a partnership for a long time, many, many years, 18 years, to closing that door. And when I, you know, making decisions, because I wanted to slow down a little bit. The door was closing. But as soon as that happens, more open up. And I think what you need to do is to be open and look at those doors that are open, and finding those new pathways. And they're open all the time. We have a sign on the refrigerator for my 17-year-old, and it says, it's not about being perfect, it's about being persistent. And, you know, if you find your passion and compassion and really stick with it, the money follows. It's not about the money. If you're looking to, you know, go make a big pile of money, that's a very difficult road to go. But if you're following your passion, your ideas, and the love that you have for something, and for me it was the environment. And so my three criteria now is doing good things, having fun, and making some money. And so
I'm going to write that down and put that on my office wall. That is a great quote.
Along that line, I'm wondering, have you seen an increased sensitivity among business to the importance of sustainability and being environmentally conscious over the past few years? I'm sure, I mean, you're talking about starting out on this quite a while ago. You're a bit of a pioneer. Has there been a change? Do you think that there's an increased sensitivity?
There is, because the market is demanding it. And this is really where, you know, here in New England, farm to table, people want to eat healthy because it is healthy. So, you know, healthy soils, healthy plants, healthy animals, healthy people. So people are starting to understand that. We grew up with that. I mean, you know, I was a milkman, you know, when I was going to people's houses and put milk bottles in people's refrigerators. They had the bread man, the, you know, all of that. So that's all coming back through this circular economy. But people's, you know, large corporations now need, are not just greenwashing. I mean, there's a lot of that going on. But people are, you know, the consumer is not stupid. And so they understand clearly what's greenwashed and what isn't. And that's why traceability. So, you know, if you have a barcode on the product, and you know who the farmer was, and, you know, that animals are treated humanely, and that the whole value chain really is explained in that little barcode, and you can look it up online. Lots of companies now are starting to want to incorporate that into the services that they provide.
So that has an implication to cutting down on exploitation, even of the workers,
yes,
as well, I would suspect.
Oh, absolutely.
And social responsibility in a broader sense.
Yes.
Very, very interesting. I'm sorry, Andrew.
I wanted to just thank Craig for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to come and talk with us and our listeners today about your experiences as a entrepreneur, as the commercial consul to Brazil, and
your new position as executive director of say the company's name,
because Aliança da Terra.
All right, I do have one other question I wanted to, just before we get to the end of our time here. I'm going to have my co-host here laugh at this. I'm sure that there's an increased you see the increased value of using drone technology down in the Brazil and some other places, right? I say this because we have an ongoing joke here on the show that I'm very interested in drones.
It's only funny to one of us.
That's right. And Andrea keeps coming
it's
up
painful
with...
It's painful for the other.
Andrea keeps coming up with trying to find ways to discourage me from my
drone
interest in this.
Drone rhymes with groan.
That's right, yeah, and I just drone on. But I know that... So I took a little advantage of you there, but...
No, and this is... You'll see what I say with no coincidences. Before I came here, I had a talk with a woman who were setting up a program with drones.
Excellent.
So with veteran women, to train them how to do this, because veteran women are the most disenfranchised part of military people. And so
there's a show. We want you back for that. Bring her in.
This woman is just incredible. She's a veteran. She just did her thesis at Antioch on this particular subject, and she's looking at a biodiversity and how to do that, as also with agriculture.
Very good. So if people want to contact you or find out more, what would be the best way to do that? Do you have a Facebook page? Do you have a website? Do you have a telephone number, an email?
You know, I think the email, and I can give it to you, but you can post it if you want. Whatever.
Sure. Yeah, let's give it out to people right now. And
okay, it's C. Casarino. That's CCASSARINO at LTI-global.com. And, you know, my cell phone, I'll give you that. Be gentle with it.
Well, let me suggest, why don't we not give out your cell phone?
All right.
But what we can say, I think, is that if they were to go to a search engine and were to type in your company's name, LTI-global, they would come up with contact information?
Yes. You know, I'll give my office phone.
I think that's great.
Okay. 603-647-3000.
And again, you're right here in Bedford, so people can actually find you. And as a backup, if they have interest in this topic in general and they can't easily find you, I think we can volunteer Andrea at the Small Business Development Center to jump in and help make connections.
And I'd like to say I want to thank both of you. I met Andrea years and years ago, and we came out of the Amherst voting the other day, and this was last November, and just sort of resurrected that after years, meeting you, Don, with her. And I want to thank you for inviting me. This has been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a very, very interesting show. So we have a couple of little traditions here that I'm going to turn the show over to Andrea, because she has
we have
two closing traditions.
Yes, so it's not that you haven't said enough important things, because you have, but we leave our listeners with and believe it or not, these are business quotes. They may not initially sound like business quotes, but there's a principle in them that can be applied to business.
Let me move this heavy metal
pot
over here.
And we'd like you to just pick one out and make sure you read the person who came up with it as well. We'd like you to read that.
So, I got two here.
There you go.
It's just a long one.
Oh. All right. So this is quote number 8. The most difficult thing is the decision to act. The rest is merely Tennessee, Amelia Earhart.
Well, very good.
That
wonderful.
Or tenacity.
Oh,
tenacity.
That's it.
Tenacity.
That's it. Right. Right.
Right. Right. Your persistence.
And yeah, you know something? Right. And I would say that this applies to you. You are a doer. You're a total doer, and you keep doing it.
Thank you.
Well, again, this is Business IQ Radio, 105.1 WBNH, Don Byrne and Andrea O'Brien. And Andrea, it's that time for the sign-off.
Yeah, well, we would like to thank our listeners for listening this week, and I want to leave you with this. You can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.